Good morning and welcome to Local Matters Health Matters, where we bring you important conversations about the health of our community here in the Upper Cumberland. Today, we're talking about a difficult but very important subject, sudden infant death syndrome, or SIDS. October is SIDS Awareness Month, and we're joined by Dr. Heather Cathy, who is an assistant professor of nursing at Tennessee Tech Whitson-Hester School of Nursing, and a local pediatric nurse practitioner who has dedicated much of her career to educating families and raising awareness about safe sleep for infants.
Hey, guys. It's good to be here.
Thank you, Heather, for being here with us today. So to start off with, can you introduce yourself to our listeners and share just a little bit about your background and education, work, that kind of thing?
Yes, absolutely. Dr. Mabry kind of led into this. I'm an assistant professor at Tennessee Tech at the School of Nursing.
Wings up.
Yes, I've been there since 2016, and I am a dual certified family and pediatric nurse practitioner, and I've practiced in Upper Cumberland since 2011. So pediatrics is kind of my home. It's where I worked undergraduate back in Murfreesboro. So SIDS is a big portion of that, especially when we're talking about our infants and our ones that are under a year old. And so happy to be here, guys.
Well, thank you for being here and sharing with us today. So you've worked with many families and students throughout your career. Why do you think it is important to raise awareness about sudden infant death syndrome?
Well, I think the big thing is there are some misconceptions for SIDS. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about SIDS, and for a lot of people, they think about those modifiable risk factors, or those things that we can change. And so if we have a family that has suffered from, you know, an infant that has had SIDS and passed away, you know, we automatically think about what are those things that they could have done different. And so increasing awareness and letting people know that there are cases that we never really understand why, you know, that infant passed away, and that there are different types and different terminology that we use for SIDS is really important. And it's really important, obviously, for prevention. You know, there are a lot of steps that we can take that will help prevent some of these things that we know to decrease the risk.
So. Yeah, because we definitely have come a long way in understanding a lot about SIDS.
Oh, yeah,
as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So, Dr. Cathy, as part of your work, how do you educate students about SIDS?
Yes. So in our undergraduate students, so those ones that are coming through to be for their BSN, in the pediatric course, we have a whole course and a whole lecture that's over safety. And so we talk about safety, whether it's poisonings, we talk a whole lot about SIDS. There's a whole section of that. And we talk about how they educate parents, you know, whether they're in the newborn nursery or they're, you know, out in the community educating people. And we talk about those preventative measures and safety measures that they can take, especially related to sleep. And the safe ways that we can put infants to sleep. For our undergraduates, the big portion of that is done when they are in newborn nurseries or when they're in the hospital, and they can educate the parents. And then for our graduate students, you know, they go through and they're going to be family nurse practitioners. They're going to be dealing with families, infants, you know, all ages. And we talk about that and talk about anticipatory guidance and how at each well-child exam, you know, you are continually educating and talking about, okay, so where's the baby sleeping at? You know, what do we have in the crib with them? What do we not want in the crib? And we talk about huge patient education with that. So graduate and undergraduate both get that. And then, of course, in the practice setting where I practice, every well-child exam, that's a portion of that. You know, we talk about, you know, how is the baby sleeping? What are our sleep patterns looking like? And so education is really a big thing. And empowering the parents to understand what we can do to help prevent some of these risk factors is really important.
So in the office, do you do that kind of guidance with those families up until they're a year old, up until they're two?
Yes, I mean, usually up until a year. Because SIDS technically, classification-wise, is up to a year. We do talk about sleep, and it gets more when we get around two and three about, you know, weaning out of naps and where they're sleeping, and like, are they sleeping through the night or are they getting up through the night coming to your bed? So a lot of more of that is more sleep training related to the older kids. But we're talking specifically for SIDS, and we're talking about safety. That newborn all the way to a year is really the ones that we're honing in on. And that is a core chunk of the education that we do every checkup that kid comes in.
Which is a lot, right?
Yes.
Newborn.
Six, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Good to know. So then why is this topic for you personally meaningful?
I mean, I think that just being in the pediatrics realm and being a pediatric nurse and seeing how this impacts families and then having kids of your own, I mean, and thinking about all those things that could potentially happen. And if there's any spark or any small thing that we can do to prevent this, I mean, that's huge. Like, if we can prevent an infant death, that's humongous when we're talking about being a pediatric nurse practitioner or a parent for that matter. That's really kind of the big thing.
Well, especially professionally and being a nurse, we do try to do prevention because we, as nurses, I think we're really good at primary prevention and let's do things before it happens.
Yes.
Yep.
So yeah.
Knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. Nurses are great educators.
Mm-hmm. Too. Oh, 100%. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And okay. So for listeners who may not be as familiar, what exactly is sudden infant death syndrome or SIDS that we've been talking about? And how is it different from other sleep-related infant deaths? Okay.
So SIDS for the longest time was kind of this large topic where we just kind of classified everything. Mm-hmm. Those sleep-related deaths were classified under it. The deaths that happened in the night that there was no way to know anything about that was classified under that as well. More recently, they've kind of branched off those terms. So we have SIDS, which is sudden infant death syndrome. And those infants are the ones that, based on autopsy, based on medical history, physical exams, we have no idea why they passed away. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big thing. And so what they came up with was SUID, which is the sudden unexpected infant death. That, when you think about it, is more of a broader umbrella that's going to encompass your SIDS. It's going to encompass those sleep-related deaths related to the infants. And then there are some that don't necessarily meet the SIDS criteria that are going to fall under that umbrella as well. So really the more correct term is going to be the SUID, even though SIDS is the more broad-based one that most people know. So we still use that term because that is, to the public, that's what most people know. And so when we're talking about this, you know, really when we look at modifiable risk factors and things that we can change and hopefully prevent some of these risks, when we're looking at the sleep-related deaths, those are the ones that we're really more talking about. Because when you look at SIDS specifically, if you look at, like, the definition of it, we don't really know why those occur. And looking at autopsies and things like that, we don't know why they occurred. But with the other ones, sleep-related, there are things that we can do to help prevent that. So it's kind of changed as far as the definitions go. Mm-hmm. SIDS overall, that broad term, is the one that we use the most just because it's more identifiable to the public and to our parents and to the people that we're educating about it.
Yes. And so when you've got a family in the office and you're doing this SIDS prevention education, what's some of the big things that you hit on?
So, I mean, sleep safety is number one. What we always are going to ask, you know, where does the baby sleep? That's the first thing. Because co-sleeping, if you look at the American Academy of Pediatrics, co-sleeping is not recommended because of the dangers associated with suffocation, strangulation, those kinds of things. What is in there? So let's say they're sleeping in a crib or a bassinet. Ideally, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends rooming in. So having a bassinet, having a crib that's in the same room as the parent so that they can monitor the baby, but not in the same bed.
Yeah.
Okay. And so not only are they in the same room, but what's inside that crib? So we ask parents and we talk to them about that. Having any sort of blankets, having any sort of stuffed animals, having any bumpers that are around the cribs. Those things are all things that we would want to deter away from because it increases the risk of strangulation. There's also, you know, really popular kind of trends and fads right now with swaddles that are weighted and weighted blankets.
I did not know. Tell me more.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
I've seen them.
Because, I mean, adults, there's a lot of adults and older kids that now do really well with weighted blankets. You know, it helps them relax and sleep. And so there have been, you know, parents and things like that that come in and talk about these weighted swaddles that help weight the baby down. And, you know, I guess if you were thinking from an adult position that, you know, this could potentially work for a child, but that increases
I've seen the pillow one. A pillow, like, it's like, it looks like a person's hand is laying on the baby and patting.
Yes.
So if.
Yes.
I know. I've seen it on social media.
But I think what's not understanding is that what there's a misconception of is that if you think about these, especially young neonates, their brains are not. They're just forming all these neurons and these connections. And so the sleep-wake cycle and being able to wake themselves up, the breathing cycles, they're not developed to where they need to. Whereas an adult, even like an adult with sleep apnea, you know, if their O2 levels start to drop and, you know, they can startle themselves awake, the baby's brains have not developed enough to do that. And so some of these things that would people think are appropriate for adults that would be appropriate for a child, definitely not appropriate. So that's the big thing is kind of just questioning and seeing and coming from a non-judgmental place because as first-time parents, sometimes we don't know. You know, we don't know specifically what the guidelines are and what I should and shouldn't be doing. So
and good that they're coming to you and asking for professional advice.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's interesting because, you know, when I was raising my children 30 years ago. Seriously, yeah, you got bumpers.
Exactly. Yeah. Bumpers were fat. They're that training was, you get them I to know. Match the nursery.
You did.
Yes, they're like, yeah, they were.
I had that.
Mm-hmm. Well, they sold them when my children were babies, too. Yeah. But I had to take, you know, like you took the pictures of the nursery and then you had to take the bumpers off the bed once the baby slept in the bed.
What's a wonder that my boys survived?
I know. It's. I mean, we've learned a lot.
We have learned a lot. There's we have learned a lot. That's but you know, these are wonderful things, practical things that people can do that that you just don't think about.
Yes.
You know, even... I mean, I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
A bumper. I would thought, I mean, oh, that's pretty.
The other thing, too, is the outlets and, like, all of the cardiorespiratory monitors.
Yes.
They're great. And I'm not knocking
them at all. I have seen those. Like, put them on their feet.
They're amazing. But I think sometimes they can give this false sense of protection.
Yeah. I've read
some
that,
parents.
Too.
And so the American Academy of Pediatrics doesn't necessarily recommend them because of that. They give this false
sense. So they don't recommend the O2 monitors.
Mm-mm. They do not.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
This is really good.
Yeah. I read that, too, that they can give people a false sense of security, and maybe they wouldn't check their baby as much as if they did not have one of those.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I did read an article about that.
Yep.
So, last question of this segment. Mm-hmm. How does, from your perspective, as an expert, how does this impact families emotionally?
Just... I mean, it has a huge impact on families. I mean, anytime there's a child or infant loss, I mean, you have to think about the grief that comes with that, especially when we're dealing with SIDS, when there's so much stigma around it. Because like I told you, we use SIDS as this kind of umbrella term, and everybody thinks, oh, they must have had blankets in the bed. They must have had bumpers. Mm-hmm. They must have been co-sleeping, and something could have happened. You know, and while that may be part of some of these cases, some of the cases we never know why the child passes away. And so having that kind of guilt and that what if for parents is just, you know, heartbreaking. So the emotional response to this is huge for families. I mean, you have the grief and on all of that, and it just impacts families, you know, for their lifetime. That's hard.
Well, I think we should pick up that in the next segment then about maybe just some statistics and perspectives.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
So, Dr. Kathy, we're back for our second segment here, and we're talking about SIDS awareness. So, do we have any national, like, or Tennessee statistics to highlight how significant this is? Because, you know, when you tell me about this, I'm thinking, well, how many cases are there? Really?
Well, when we look at this, it's kind of difficult because it gets clumped into the infant mortality rates.
Oh.
And so a lot of it is not specified, but it's thought to up to 25% of those infant mortality rates are affiliated with some sort of sleep-related cause. Okay. So when we're talking about that, and we know Tennessee, as far as infant mortality rates, is higher than the national average. Mm-hmm. National averages are usually, I think, around 5.5, Tennessee being closer to 6.5. Putnam County tracks approximately on that. But we do know rural counties and rural populations have higher infant mortality rates. Okay. And if you look at some of the risk factors that are, I mean, they're non-modifiable after the baby's born. They're modifiable prior to that. So your adolescent pregnancy rates, your low birth rates, your preterm births, those kinds of things increase the risk of SIDS. Yeah. So we know those counties and those areas, rural Tennessee and areas that have those higher rates are going to have higher infant mortality rates. That makes sense. And then if you look at that, you know, looking at about a quarter of those being associated with some sort of sleep-related cause, that increases that too. So when we look at those with the sleep-related causes, and we know that there are some preventable things like we talked about, you know, it's pretty significant, you know, and it's things that we can modify to decrease this overall. I think when I was looking at 2022, there were 541 infant deaths in the state of Tennessee recorded. So when we talk about infant deaths, that's 0 to 1 year of age, okay, for all different causes. So, and you look at a quarter of that, you know, that we could potentially have prevented, you know, by doing some of these steps. Now, we can't prevent them all because we talked about SIDS not always having a cause.
Right.
But it's definitely something that's important that we can do some things.
And I know for maternal health that Tennessee ranks very low. I think we're 48, 49.
Something like that.
Out of 50 states for the listeners.
Yes.
We have, and there's a lot of factors that go into that. Yeah. So what I'm hearing you say is that you know, the mom plays into, and when the child is born, play into their risk for SIDS.
So when we talk about pediatric health, I mean, you're talking about maternal health too.
Yes.
They're one and the same. You know, okay. If we don't have a healthy mom,
I appreciate you saying that.
We're not going to have healthy babies that are born.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. So that's going to lead me into my next favorite segment. And we talk about myths versus facts.
Right.
And we've already talked about one.
Yes.
The swaddling heavy, yes, the blanket. I did not realize that. I'm not a pediatric social media whiz. But, you know, a myth that I hear is that SIDS can only happen in unsafe homes, yes, or to neglectful parents. And I think that's where you were,
right,
kind of alluding to the shame and,
right,
and the
stigma that's, yeah, associated with it. Because I think a lot of people, when they hear SIDS, they, yeah, automatically think that.
There's,
they think,
cause,
oh, gosh, they were neglectful in doing X, Y, and Z, mm-hmm, with their baby. And we talked about it. You know, not all cases of SIDS have a known cause. We don't know, you know, that there was some sort of suffocation or strangulation or something like that associated with it. So it's not neglectful. You know, it's, yeah, not always something where there's a case of neglect or something like that that's going into that, which makes it more difficult for those parents that are clumped into the SIDS, you know, category, and it's not something that has a known cause to it. So, yeah, definitely a myth.
Okay, and then that's going to lead into the second one. It can be completely prevented.
Yes, absolutely not. Okay, yes, we have some risk factors we can mitigate, mm-hmm, but completely prevented, no, because some of them we don't even know why it occurred.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next one. Hot topic right now. Vaccines cause SIDS.
Again, another good myth. So vaccines actually prevent some illnesses which could have complications and lead to this or contribute to this. So if anything, vaccines are going to help protect our kiddos, help make them healthier and give them better outcomes related to this.
Yeah, yeah. I completely agree for adults and for, mm-hmm, for children, but especially for, you know, small babies that need that extra, yes, protection because, mm-hmm, they don't have a robust immune system.
Right, and you get, you know, a couple months in and that maternal immunity that they had for mom decreases and starts to go down. So that's when vaccine kind of really help boost that immune system so that they're able to fight off the hundreds of viruses and bacteria that they come into contact on a weekly basis. So if anything, that's going to help promote their immune system.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. So get your babies vaccinated. That's from Dr. Mabry. I'll go out on the limb on that one.
Yeah.
The next one is SIDS only happens during the night.
Yes. Another one that's not necessarily true. A lot of cases do happen at night because that's when they're doing a majority of their sleeping. But you have to think, babies sleep
all day long.
Throughout the day, you know. They have naps. They have things like that. And so it can happen during a nap, or it can happen when they're sleeping in the car seat. It can happen anything like that. Not necessarily just at night.
I know. When you made that comment about at age 2 to 3 that you have to, mm-hmm, stop getting naps. I still like naps.
Well, I do too.
Okay.
100%. They weaned them out of kindergarten now.
Darn,
my
I
kindergartner.
Know,
I was
crazy.
Like, ooh.
Oh, I don't like that either.
Everybody needs some rest. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even the teachers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Sorry. Next one is babies are safer if they sleep in a car seat, a swing, or an inclined,
okay,
sleeper.
Is that this is actually another point of teaching that we do as,
oh,
well.
Okay.
So, no, they are actually at a higher risk of SIDS sleeping in the car seats, the swings, the inclined sleepers. There were actually sleepers that were pulled off the market a couple years ago.
Really?
Because they were, I think they were marketing to babies being able to sleep in them, but a lot of those little bouncy swings, things like that, the baby should not be sleeping in them. Mm-hmm. They're at an incline. If they are at an incline higher than 10 degrees, mm-hmm, that actually increases the risk of SIDS. So they should not be sleeping in these. And I know it's hard as a parent. You're on a car ride and the baby's sleeping and you just pull them out of the car seat and bring them in and think, oh, maybe they can just sleep there. That's really not the safest environment for, mm-hmm, them. That increases the risk. So
10 degrees. So, mm-hmm, what about if they're croupy and sick? See, that's where I kind of think of, you know, you say elevate the head of the,
right,
the,
yeah,
a little bit. But
ideally,
no,
these babies should not be. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Do your good nasal, yep, suction. Use your humidifier. Yeah. And that will, mm-hmm, that will help with some of that.
Yep. Okay. Good advice. How about if I use a baby monitor? So, do I need to, I mean, that should be fine. I'll be able to hear them breathe. Right.
Right. Yeah. So again, it goes back to some of those other monitors. And that doesn't necessarily help mitigate SIDS. If anything, it's going to give that false sense of security. Like they are monitoring, uh-huh, the baby like nothing can,
yeah,
happen. Because you have to think, a lot of these cases, we never know why it occurred. So that monitor may not pick up anything until it's too late at that point. So,
okay.
Yep.
Thanks. That actually really helped, I think, for the listeners in the Upper Cumberland. No, because some of those things I was like, oh, yeah, sleeping in a car seat. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But that's good to know. So what does the research actually say about the causes of SIDS and risk factors? I mean, I know you've given us your expert opinion, and you have talked about the Academy of Pediatrics. So kind of go back to that.
Yes, there's definitely some research that we know that contributes to this, which we hit on a little bit here about vulnerable infants. So those ones that are preterm, we know increase the risk. We know that their brains have immature centers in them that are going to do their sleep-wake cycle, that are doing their breathing. Their temperature regulation is another thing. So babies that overheat are at increased risk of SIDS. Mm-hmm. We know that from the research as well as those external stressors. So the external things that we talked about, something avoidable, modifiable, that's in the environment when they are sleeping. Research tells us that those are three of the big things that are going to impact SIDS.
So say that again. So temperature?
So temperature regulation.
Okay.
Temperature regulation and their breathing, their ability to do their sleep-wake cycle within the brain center.
Right.
Also being a vulnerable population. Yes. So those with the, premature, those kinds of things. And just it's
low birth weight.
And low birth weight, premature, things like that. We're going to increase it. Research has showed us that increases risk.
Very good. Yeah. So we're going to end this segment, and we're going to come back and talk about more about SIDS.
And we're back talking about SIDS awareness with Dr. Heather Cathy. And so in the last segment, we were talking about some causes and risk factors of SIDS. And I don't know that we got to finish that conversation. What are some other risk factors of SIDS?
Yeah, so obviously sleeping environment, we've kind of hit on the head as far as what we don't want in the sleeping environment, overheating. Exposure just to tobacco and smoke is a big one as well. So the increased related to that maternal smoking during pregnancy, secondhand smoke after birth, all of that increases the risk factors. As well as, there are some things that help. So breastfeeding actually decreases it. Yeah, and helps with SIDS. Once breastfeeding is well established, actually pacifier use throughout the night will help with SIDS as well, decrease the risk. And that's really kind of the big thing. We talked about immunizations. They help decrease the risk. And then room sharing. So not necessarily having the baby in the bed, but having the baby in the same room, in their bassinet or in their crib, appears to reduce the risk of SIDS as well. So
breastfeeding, pacifier use once the breastfeeding's established, and then sleeping in the room.
Rooming in with the parents,
And vaccines. Those are all good prevention.
Yes.
Awesome. So switching gears just a little bit, since we talked about the risk factors. Oh, one thing we didn't mention, though. What about parents who think, well, my baby's healthy. I didn't have a premature baby. I didn't have a low birth weight baby. I had a healthy pregnancy.
Right.
And they say, that SIDS isn't really something that I need to worry about. I mean, how would you respond to that?
Right. And I think that you have to think about this. There was a metaphor that I read, and it said wearing a helmet when you're biking, wearing a seatbelt when you're in a car, et cetera, those kinds of things. You don't expect an accident, but these are all things that reduce the risk. So doing these things that are going to help protect and reduce the risk are all things that are going to help, no matter whether you have a healthy or a premature baby or, somebody that has comorbidities or anything like that. It's not going to hurt. It's going to reduce the risk. And healthy babies can unfortunately experience SIDS as well. So
yes,
we need to protect them all.
Yeah. Absolutely. Very good point. So switching gears now, let's talk a little bit about community awareness and basically just a call to action to the Upper Cumberland residents. So let's bring it home to the Upper Cumberland. How does SIDS impact families right here in our region in the Upper Cumberland?
So as we know, like we talked about infant mortality, our rural areas, which the Upper Cumberland is, we are surrounded by very rural populations, especially in some of our surrounding counties close to Putnam County. We know that our infant mortality rates are higher. We know that these rates are increased. We know that our premature births, our adolescent birth rates, all of those rates are higher in our rural population. So this is an area that this impacts, and spreading awareness, spreading education is really, really important so that we can hopefully reduce some of these modifiable risk factors and make for healthier babies later on. That's really kind of the big thing as far as how SIDS impacts the Upper Cumberland. because we have less, sometimes less resources available. You look at maternal health, we were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. you know, you have less resources mm-hmm. available from day one, you know, from conception, and we're not helping them at that early stage on. So that's really the big thing, is just bringing in resources, bringing in awareness to these areas, because we know that it impacts it more.
So knowledge is huge. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm hearing.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, you know, I do feel like knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. It's also going to help prevent. Do you know of local resources or organizations in the Upper Cumberland? I know we've talked a lot about maternal health as mm-hmm. well as infant health. But are there resources about SIDS for parents or caregivers who maybe wanted to learn more, or maybe some good websites?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So Kids Central TN is a plethora of websites, like anything that they would need to know education-wise. And they have a specific area for SIDS. It is a great website. Kids Central TN.
TN, mm-hmm. like Tennessee.
Absolutely. Okay. All of the local health departments usually have programs associated with this, the Putnam County Health Department, or any of the ones that are surrounding in the Upper Cumberland region as well.
Good.
And then I usually direct any of my patients, American Academy of Pediatrics.
Yes.
Their website is fantastic, and they've got great information that's evidence-based, that's easy for them to read, that gives them clear kind of regulations and recommendations for what they do recommend, what they don't recommend. Those are probably the top three that I recommend for my patients. Yeah.
Awesome. So great resources available that are really kind of at your fingertips mm-hmm. too. Yeah. So we've talked a lot about risk factors, prevention, what not to do.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the recommended safe sleep?
Yes. So the easy mnemonic to remember is going to be ABC, alone, on their back, in the crib. Okay. So we
ABC.
Want them alone. We do not want them co-sleeping with a parent or anyone else. We don't want anything in the bed. We want them on their back. So that's going to be the safest position for them to sleep in. And we want them in a crib or a bassinet earlier on. So they're in their own space to decrease the risk. Those are really kind of the big things.
ABC.
ABC.
Absolutely yeah. easy. Yep.
That's easy to remember.
Yeah.
ABC, because we use that as health professionals a lot anyway.
Yeah. So. Yeah. There's another kind of
acronym.
An acronym, or they used to use it, was a program, is back to sleep.
Yes.
To remember that the babies need to be on their back.
Back to sleep.
Yeah.
I do remember that. The health department had that a lot.
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So thinking of health departments and continuing with these resources, maternal health,
mm-hmm.
is there, I mean, I know that you guys probably see, I know you see peds, but you're also dual certified as an FNP. Are there any resources for maternal health about getting people in to get, prenatal care? They're getting education about stopping smoking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the health department has some of those programs. There's a really good Call the Chance program that does smoking cessation and actually gives them free diapers for stopping smoking during pregnancy.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, so the CHANT program is a really good one through the health department. They do have really great programs. They also have home visitation programs where they go and they visit the families prior to birth, after birth.
Yeah.
To do more education and to talk mm-hmm. about, you know, kind of look at the environment and say, okay, these are the things that we can do to help reduce these risk factors.
Mm-hmm. So going in the home, mm-hmm. that's excellent. Because, you tell people at a visit and you're in that room for, 10, 15 minutes with them, and you're trying to give them all this information.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you have no idea what they walk into at their house. You know, you don't know what that environment's like and what kind of struggles they may have and what resources they may need based on what their environment is at their home.
I do. I love that, meeting people where they're at.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. 100%. I was thinking the same thing.
Yes. I do. So breastfeeding, is there resources for breastfeeding as well, you know, after the baby's born to help encourage this?
Yeah, so lactation consultants, so if we have a baby that comes in, or we have a mom that's struggling with it, we have a baby that's not gaining weight, you know, we can hire and we can get in lactation consultants to come in to help with that, because that is a huge thing, that there are multitude of benefits on top of decreasing mm-hmm, the risk mm-hmm. of SIDS, but they're going to be amazing at helping that mom and that baby connect so that hopefully we can get them.
And the health department is another great resource mm-hmm. for breastfeeding too.
Yes.
So lots of breastfeeding assistants at the health department, because mm-hmm. they have lactation specialists as well.
Yep.
So,
any advice then for community members that don't have any young children? Mm-hmm. Let's say me, I'm empty nester now. So,
but you might have grandbabies in the future.
True.
Yes.
Yes.
That is the goal. But how does that play a role in supporting awareness and prevention?
I mean, so, I think it impacts us all. It's the next generation, you know, so you have to look at it that way. It may not impact you directly if you don't have small kids. But like she said, you may have grandkids coming up. You may, you know, be working in a pediatric office and caring for these young babies. And this is the next generation coming up. And we really need to kind of focus on that. And even if it's not, you know, you don't have kids at home, increasing awareness and understanding that and understanding too, like when I'm educating the parents, that I also need to educate the caregivers or grandparents or anybody that's going to be caring for the kid, you know,
Do they still
child
have
care centers.
Do they still have babysitting classes?
I don't know.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I wonder. Anyway, that
where
might
would you
be a great thing. I'm just saying to the listeners.
Yeah, exactly.
If you've got young people that are babysitting, go over.
Safe sleep patterns, CPR,
first
all
aid,
of that.
Safety.
Yeah, all of that. Yeah.
Excellent.
That's huge.
That would be good.
That's a segue, sorry.
Yeah.
That's, But I know, I was thinking, you know, even babysitters, because I remember babysitting when I was 14, 15, and I didn't have a clue sometimes.
I didn't either. But at least the kids I babysat were older. They were not babies.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dr. Kathy.
Yes.
If parents or caregivers could take away just one key message from our conversation today.
No pressure.
What would you want it to be?
Well, I probably have two things. One, ABCs.
Yep.
So.
What is it?
ABCs are going to be
The
alone, on their back, and in a crib.
Okay,
that's a big thing. And number two is kind of talking about the stigma associated with it. And if there's a family that has suffered from SIDS, it's not necessarily, you know, it's not their fault, you know, and there's a grieving process associated with that. And as a community, if we come together and better support those families, I think that would be a big thing because they do need, you know, they need that support. And it's really hard for them because there is a stigma associated with it.
Yep, absolutely. Those are two great takeaways.
It is. So the last question. I know she said that was the last question, but really this is the last question. So what gives you hope, Dr. Kathy, as you continue working to raise this awareness and support families here in our region?
I mean, I think seeing our students and being able to educate them and knowing we're educating the next generation of nurses to go out and then go educate parents, I think that's a big thing. And knowing that we are doing a good job laying the foundation with them because they're the ones that usually are going to be front line. You know, they're in the newborn nursery talking to the families about this. Our nurse practitioner students are the ones in the clinics that are going to be educating these families. And I think that's really a big thing. And hopefully we can start to see a decline in this once there's more widespread education on it.
And I agree. You know, when you're a nurse, if people know you're a nurse, they always ask.
Oh, yeah.
They will ask you questions about everything.
Anything
health related.
And they'll send you pictures of anything.
Exactly. Pictures. But having those students prepared.
Yeah.
I agree. That is a great takeaway. So, Dr. Kathy, I just want to thank you so much for joining
us having me
today and sharing your expertise and your passion, we can tell, with this important topic. And to our listeners, we encourage you to share this information with family, friends, caregivers. Safe sleep saves lives.